Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Tom, 12th Town, River Hill, Texas. Today is June 7, 2017, or the city in 13, 2021. We're going to start our first service today with a song entitled, Bring Them In. Partisanship, that's voice I hear. Out in the desert, dark and drear, calling the lambs he'd gone astray, far from the shepherd's fold away. Bring them in, bring them in from the fields of sin. Bring them in. Bring them in, bring the wanderers to Yahshua, who'll go and help the shepherd kind, help them the little lambs to find, who'll bring the lost ones to the fold, though they'll be sheltered from the cold. Bring them in, bring them in, bring them in from the fields of sin. Bring them in, bring them in, bring the wanderers to Yahshua. Out in the desert, hear their cry, out on the mountain wild and high. Tis the Master speaks to thee, go find my lambs where'er they be. Bring them in, bring them in, bring them in from the fields of sin. Bring them in, bring them in, bring the wandering ones to Yahshua.
Again, number 19, we're going to continue on our series. Everything that we preach about is you have to be born again to understand inspiration's explanation on these prophecies. And so, therefore, we're going to continue our series with that name. It says, I, John, saw the beast having seven heads and ten horns. The name of our subject today is Horns and Heads All Present. And upon his horns, ten crowns. Let us not overlook the fact that all horns, crowns, and heads are present on the beast. Now keep in mind that when we say beast, let's remember that the beast represents the New World Order today, as it represented the world order back during the Dark Ages, when it was in charge of church and state. State simply means world. So the beast is in charge of the world government over the religion and the civil. Civil and world and beast goes together. Therefore, whatever meaning is derived by the symbol, all must be in existence at the time his deadly wound was healed. Had it not been so, the symbols of the heads and horns would have come one after another, as it was with the little horn. And the other three that were plucked up from the nondescript beast of Daniel 7:7. A similar method is observed with the he-goat. After the notable horn Alexander was broken off, four came up to take its place, the four divisions of Grecia. And after these came up the exceeding great horn, which primarily represents Rome, Daniel 8:8-9. So keep in mind, the notable horn that was broke off represented Alexander, the head of Greece. Okay? And the big horn that came up after that horn was broke off represents Rome. But it's on that same beast, goat. Okay, so now it looks like the fourth beast, the nondescript beast in Daniel's vision, took over the government of Greece. So it says, where systems and governments do not all exist at the same time, the symbol shows their consecutive order. Another factor to be noted, that every symbol of the entire procession of the beast point out facts that were to transpire within the period represented by each beast, and not one of them refers to anything in the past, save the hereditary ancestral characteristics. Therefore, heads or horns have no reference to anything before or after the period represented by the beast. It is also unnatural for heads, members of the beast, to exist before or after the beast himself. Therefore, it would be inconsistent to conclude that the horns as well as the heads could denote a consecutive order of the system so long as they all appear at the time of the closing act of the beast. The leopard-like beast in his wounded state must be intended to prophetically point out the existing condition with the present civilization. The symbol of the head. It is impossible that both horns and heads could stand for civil governments or kings. If the horns represent the political side, then the heads cannot. John says of the leopard-like beast, I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death. As the head that was wounded represents a religious system, then all seven must represent religious organization, for all heads are alike save the wound. Thus it is an unmistakable fact that the symbols are intended to reveal both the civil and the religious side of the present world. The crowns represent civil authorities. As previously explained, had the been on the heads like on the dragon of Revelation 12:3, it would denote that the churches are using the civil arm of the state to propagate their dogma, as in the days of the imperial and papal Rome, represented by the dragon. But since the crowns are on the horns, and the state is independent from the church, okay, in other words, when we say state, mean that the beast. The beast is independent from the house of Israel. When it says church here, we want to put the name Israel there. It proves the symbol by the crowns to be correct, as the facts brought forth regarding the nature of the symbols cannot be questioned. It is evident that we have a positive foundation for their application. The leopard-like beast is a descendant of the four ancient empires. Therefore, he represents the world, but more particularly the entire Western civilization. So in that case, then, that leopard-like beast should be counted as the fifth beast in that order, with their civil and religious system. Consequently, the heads represent Christendom. Let's put it this way. They represent all the Protestant churches, including the Seventh-day Adventists, because the Adventist is that seventh head on that beast. Have the seven churches. Seven heads, seven churches. And the Adventist, that seventh church is the one that received the deadly wound in 1500. So Laodicea was the last of the seven churches, and that's the church we're dealing with today, the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And the Catholic Church joining together as one. Now, if the Adventists had kept protesting, like they did in 1844, if they had kept protesting, but they stopped protesting in 1890. And so they give that beast a 40-year spiritual fast from 1890 to 1930 to heal his deadly wound. Because he ought to have said by 1929, 1930, that wound was healed. And said because the Adventists stopped protesting, the last Protestant church of the seven, Laodicea, number seven, and they stopped protesting. And Judah, house of David, had a 40-year spiritual fast to become purified in doctrine from 1890 to 1930, so likewise, that deadly wound on that beast was healed during that 40-year period as well. So D.T. Hollis says by 1929 that wound was healed. And it's true, because that's when the Catholic Church got its autonomy back again, got its sovereign existence back as a country, as a sovereign state, country. They have their own pope as their president. They have their own members. They have their own taxpayers. And so they have a governmental system within themselves. They're at the Vatican. And that's the headquarters for the beast. Catholic Church is not the beast. Just like if it was the beast, you'd have to say the Adventist Church is the beast. So the Adventist Church has joined up with them lock, stock, and barrel. So you can't say the Adventist Church is the beast, but you can say that the beast is a synonymous term with the word Babylon and be correct. So the beast, it says the whole world wondered after the beast. So they wondered after Babylon and her idolatry. Consequently, the heads represent the seven congregations of Israel collectively. Revelation 1, seven candlesticks, seven congregations. With the seven candlesticks, those candlesticks represents the sanctuary service, and only Israel has the temple given to them. So John said, the beast having seven heads and ten horns. So now, these seven heads, they're on that beast. They're on that beast's head. And the ten horns is on that beast. Those ten horns have grown out of the head of that beast, as well as those seven heads. Those seven heads. Well, I say the seven heads. Now, the seven heads wouldn't be drawn out of the head of the beast, because those seven heads were Mystery Babylon, that woman, Revelation 17, she was in charge of those seven heads when she set up on many waters. And when she transfers herself in Revelation 17 to the scarlet colored beast's back, that represents the New World Order, and that certainly represents the New World Order, then she brought the seven heads with her. So Mystery Babylon, that provides commercialism for the beast. In other words, Mystery Babylon is the one that collects her revenue and finances her agenda for the New World Order, Mystery Babylon. So consequently, they put her in charge again of the beast, because she controls the money streams. Okay. And the beast having seven heads and ten horns and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemy. In fact, there is the name of blasphemy on their heads as an additional proof that they can only represent religious organizations, for blasphemy is equivalent unto hypocrisy, and hypocrisy means an attempt to mix the sacred with the common. But Yahweh says, I know the blasphemy of them which say they are Jews and are not, that are of the synagogue of Satan. Revelation 2:9. Of whom is Hymenaeus and Alexander, whom I have delivered unto Satan, that they may learn not to blaspheme. 1 Timothy 1:20. Therefore, son of man, speak unto the house of Israel, and say unto them, Thus saith Yahweh Elohim, yet in this your fathers have blasphemed me, and that they have committed trespass against me. Ezekiel 20:27. Your iniquities and the iniquities of your fathers together, saith the Yahweh, which have burned incense upon the mountains. Now, who burned incense upon the mountains in ancient times? The children of Israel and the children of Judah. They're the only ones that had, was in charge of the incense of the sanctuary. And the mountains are just those seven churches that you find there in Revelation 1, entitled Ephesus, and Smyrna, and Pergamos, and Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea, and blaspheme me upon the hill. Therefore will I measure their former work into their bosom. Isaiah 65:7. Disobedience unto the word of Yahweh is blasphemy. So disobedience is blasphemy. Naturally, the question arises, who could these blasphemous denominations be? There can certainly be many considered the multiplicity of the sect. The prophetic word of Yahweh, speaking of this present time, said, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers, walking after their own lust. 2 Peter 3:3. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust they shall heap unto themselves teachers having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto fables. 2 Timothy 4:3-4. What has brought the present day confusion? Because they have departed from the sound Bible, truth is the only answer that can be given. Is it possible that all can be right when no two believe alike? With but one Bible, one gospel, one Yeshua, one hell to shun, and one heaven to gain? Yeshua said, and the other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. John 10:16. Such satanic confusion as the one at the present time was about to arise in the days of Paul. As the Spirit of Yahweh moved upon him, he uttered the words of the sharp rebuke. Now I beseech you, brethren, by the name of our Savior Yeshua the Messiah, that ye all speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, but that ye be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. For it hath been declared unto me of you, my brethren, by them which are of the house of Shiloh, that there are contentions among you. Now this I say, that every one of you saith, I am of Paul, and I am of Apollos, and I am of Cephas, and I of Yeshua. Is Yeshua divided? Was Paul crucified for you? Or were you baptized in the name of Paul? 1 Corinthians 1:10-13. How great the contrast between the position taken by the Spirit-filled servant of Yahweh and the present-day self-styled apostle. Yeshua said, and these things will they do unto you, because they have not known the Father nor me, John 16:3. Had all these so-called Christian leaders been led by the Spirit of Yahweh, they would imitate the example set forth by the prophets and the apostles. Then there could have been no division in the biblical truth. For the present-day condition is indeed a blasphemy, and fulfills the word of the Master, for there shall arise false Christ, false messiahs, and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, inasmuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Well, that's what happened. Brother Johnson, by apostatizing, he deceived everyone except myself and my wife and Alan. But now Alan, he didn't stay undeceived, though he senses apostatized. So my wife and I apparently then are the only two that were elected out of Kermit to take over. In other words, there was an election of grace there, 2002, and that election of grace lasted for a whole year, from Passover to Passover, up to 2003. So that's how long the election took place, to elect the leaders to succeed the last one. In view of this great confusion, there is apparent difficulty to immediately determine who is right and who is wrong. Yeshua said, again, I say unto you, that if two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven. Matthew 18:19. There could be nothing more pleasing to Yahweh than for one of his children to ask in sincerity the way of the truth. Therefore, such a one shall not be left in darkness. Asking it shall be given you, seeking you shall find, knocking it shall be opened unto you. Matthew 7:7. If people care to find the truth, it can easily be done. But the fact of the matter is that they do not care. People would rather be deceived than to ask Yahweh to show them his truth. People, yes, they pray, but their prayers are not heard. For he that turneth away his ear from hearing the law, even his prayer shall be an abomination. Proverbs 28:9. So, for 3 years about, I carried on with Alan along, and I kept his foot to the law. On everything that he tried to get me to change my mind on, I just put it to the law and let it stand at that. Even his prayer shall be an abomination. The so-called Christians of this day say that scripture is in the Old Testament and for the Jews only. We turn to the New Testament for light upon the subject. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 5:19. For the honest in the heart, with surprise, bear the word, or hear the word, from the impious scoffer of the day. That does not mean the law of Yahweh. It is the commandment of Yahshua, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. True. But which one of the Ten Commandments can you break and yet fulfill the commandments of Yahshua? And if you love your neighbor, will you dishonor your father, Yahweh? Are not the first four kept to show honor to Yahweh, and the last six to test our love unto men? Yahshua said, on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets, Matthew 22:40. Is the begotten Son of Yahweh working in opposition to come to his Father? For the revelation of Yeshua Messiah, which Elohim gave unto him, to show unto his servant things which must shortly come to pass, and he sent and signified it by his angel and to his servant John. Revelation 1:1. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of Yahweh and the faith of Yeshua. Revelation 14:12. Has not Yahshua said that his saints keep the commandments of Yahweh? Again, the carnal mind raises an objection. They keep the commandments of Yahweh and not the law. But the Spirit declares, if you have respect to persons, you commit sin and are convinced of the law as transgression. For whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in one point is guilty of all. For he that said, do not commit adultery, said also, do not kill. Now if thou commit no adultery, yet thou kill, thou art become a transgressor of the law. So speak ye, and so do, as they that shall be judged by the law of liberty. James 2:9-12. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. Revelation 22:14. For the keeping of his commandments is a ticket into heaven, unto the law and unto the testimony. If they speak not according unto this word, it is because there is no light in them. Isaiah 8:20. Because the carnal mind is enmity against Yahweh, for it is not subject to the law of Yahweh, neither indeed can be. Romans 8:7. He that saith, I know him, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar. And the truth is not in him. Is that truth? And keepeth not his commandments is a liar. And see, 1 John 2:4. After losing one devilish loophole, the carnal mind takes hold of another, determined to serve the devil and deceive himself. And with his nose in the air, he utters the words, we are not to keep the law according unto the letter, but according unto the Spirit. For the letter killeth, but the Spirit giveth life. His misconception of what truth is leads him to believe that to keep the law according unto the Spirit, he must disregard the written word. As Elohim and keep the divine law according unto his own ways and in harmony with his carnal mind, making void Yahweh's own inscription, see Exodus 31:18, thus exalting the finite above the infinite. What greater blasphemy can one commit? We give here a brief explanation of the subject. To keep the law according to the letter is to build a wall around it, as the proud Pharisees did. We quote 1 John 3:15. Whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. Therefore, though we kill not and yet hate our brother, we have kept the law blameless according to the letter, but not according unto the Spirit. For the keeping of the law according to the Spirit has a broader significance than the carnal mind can conceive. If I must keep the whole law, I must keep the whole word of Yahweh in every respect. Otherwise, I would dishonor him and would become a transgressor of the law, as a disobedient son dishonors his earthly father and becomes guilty of the fifth commandment in the law. Are we saved by the law? No, indeed. We are judged by the law. So if we willfully disobey the word of Yahweh, we fall under the condemnation of the law. For if we sin willfully, after that we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for sins. Hebrews 10:26. But if we love the righteousness of Yahweh as expressed in His law, and determined to obey His holy word, wherever found, Bible or spirit of prophecy, according unto the revelation by His Spirit, then we receive the power which enables us to fulfill the divine purpose, and thereby our sins are blotted out by the blood of Yeshua, and thus we are made free from the law and its condemnation, placed under the divine grace. For it is true that people like to be deceived, flattering themselves that they are on the way to heaven, while Satan winks at their ignorance. For the word of Yahweh says, "And many shall follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of the truth shall be evil spoken of." Way of the truth. That's Yahweh's way is in the sanctuary. But these as natural brute beasts, made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of the things that they understand not, and shall utterly perish in their own corruption. 2 Peter 2:2-12. This proves how sectarianism sprung up, as it has been proven and generally accepted that the seven churches of Revelation, chapters 2 and 3, represented the history of the congregation in the apostolic era. It is evident that the congregation was split into seven sections. Okay. The congregation of Israel was split into seven sections. That means the seven, they had seven names, and there's seven separate congregations. The later sin being the last, she is also in danger of falling according unto the testimony of the true witness. So originally they were all one congregation of Israel, but then they split into seven different congregations. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will spew thee out of my mouth. Revelation 3:16. Yahweh has sent message after message unto to give light upon His word, written word. They were intended to correct error, rebuke sin, and reprove the sinner. But the leaders of each section threw out the messages, and the few who were willing to sacrifice all for the truth were forced to depart from the churches and march on with the light. Were the leaders willing to correct their errors and purify the congregation, it would have been, or were the leaders willing, there would have been but one section. By the denial of the truth, each section cut itself off from the mighty arm of Yahweh. Thus not one of these congregations of the seven, Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, Laodicea, those seven, had additional light on the scriptures, other than that which was imparted unto them by the founders of each movement. This fact proves that the prophetic word of Yahweh being correct, and the older the section, the greater the condemnation. Therefore, these congregations are represented by the heads. The blasphemy over them denotes their fall. Should they refuse this last call also, then the revelation of these facts would be against them and will bring their final ruin. The message regarding the 144,000 and the call for the Reformation presented under the Seventh-day Adventist congregation in 1930 was in like manner rejected. Therefore, as the leadership of the congregations of Israel, that's talking about the seven, have never accepted the message at any time, they are certainly fulfilling the following prophecy. The wise men are ashamed. They are dismayed and taken. Lo, they have rejected the word of the Yahweh, and what wisdom is in them? Therefore, the pastors are become brutish, and have not sought the Yeshua. Therefore, they shall not prosper, and all their flocks shall be scattered. Jeremiah 8, 9, and 10, and 21. I need to back up and make a little correction here. Therefore, as the leadership of the Seventh-day Adventist churches all over the world in 1890 have never accepted the message at any time, they are certainly fulfilling the following prophecy. Okay, I read that. For the seven heads of the leopard-like beast represent this mystery of unrighteousness and hypocrisy, showing how each one fell into the trap as they came to it. So this is talking about the seven churches of Asia, starting with Ephesus and ending with Laodicea. Therefore, since Luther's time and on, Yahweh permitted that his people should be cast out by the Satan's flood, the unconverted. Thus, he had been calling his church from one movement to another. So, those seven churches used to start out as one, split up into seven different congregations, and then they came back during the Dark Ages, and they came upon the scene of the action. And each one of those had leaders, though, and Paul was the leader of Ephesus. He accepted all the truth, but his converts was the one that fell away. Likewise, all the other leaders of the seven candlesticks, their converts fell away after the leaders died or whatever. Thus, he has been calling the congregation of Israel from one movement to another. Okay, so the first movement was with Moses coming out of Egypt. The second, Moses, Yahshua, called the disciples and set the second movement up with them. And then the third movement was set up with William Miller in 1833, and the fourth one set up with Ellen D. White in 1844, and this last one set up with Elijah David here in 2002. Therefore, they who lower the standard and refuse to reform at the sounding of the trumpet are the very ones who cause division in the congregation of Yahweh. Now, I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offenses contrary unto the doctrine which you have learned, and avoid them. For they that are such serve not our Yahshua Messiah, but their own belly, and by good words and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple. Romans 16, 17, and 18. Since the history of the congregation is such, and the last section, the letter of sins, Seventh-day Adventist, is in a worse condition and under greater condemnation than any previous one, and as there is no time left for calling out of a new movement, this is where V.T. Hallett made a mistake here, because the Adventists were the fourth movement. There are five movements in the parable of Matthew 20 that has to be carried out. And we represent the fifth one, the house of David here. The everlasting kingdom of heaven actually represents the fifth movement. It's in charge of the fifth movement. Then a message of an amazing light and a stern rebuke through the word of Yahweh with a manifestation of the divine judgment is the only remedy that can bring true conversion and reformation. Thus, appearing a congregation to stand without spot, wrinkle, or any such thing, of which only can be said, and the dragon was wroth with the woman, the congregation as a body, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, that keep the commandments of Yahweh and have the testimony of Yahshua Messiah. Revelation 12:17. Okay, it is the purity of the congregation that incurs the wrath of the dragon. For the seven congregations of Israel, and you know the names of them, Ephesus, Sardis, Laodicea, were also symbolized by seven candlesticks. And the leadership of the same congregations by the seven angels. So we read, the mystery of the seven stars, which I saw in my right hand, and the seven golden candlesticks the seven stars are the angels of the seven congregations, and the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven congregations, Revelation 1:20. And unto the angel of the congregation of the Laodiceans write, Revelation 3:14. Note the message is addressed to the angel, leadership, and not the candlestick, the congregation as a body. Therefore, the condemnation is not unto the candlestick, the congregation as a body, but to the angel, the prophet in charge of that candlestick, because thou sayest, I am rich and increaseth goods and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable, and poor and blind and naked, Revelation 3:17. My brethren, this is not against you, for it is a Yeshua speaking, who died for you, but it will be if you change not your course of the action. If the Yeshua, by assembling these seven congregations in a group of seven candlesticks, and giving the blackest record to the last one, is not calling the Laodiceans Babylon, then neither is the interpretation of the heads doing so. It is not because the Laodiceans are better that they are not called Babylon, for their record is worse. But it is to show that on account of their increased light, he is to deal differently with them. It is to prove that if the angel leadership of the congregation of the Laodiceans should reject the message of the true witness, he can not call 144,000 out from the midst of them into another movement by the call of Revelation 18. Okay, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sin, that ye receive not of her plague. Verse 4. But rather by the message of Revelation 7 and Ezekiel 9, thus speedily releasing his people and quickly finish the work and cut it short in righteousness, because the short work will Yahshua make upon the earth, Romans 9:28. Okay, it says, disobedience to the word of Yahweh is blasphemy, and blasphemy is hypocrisy. That is to say, they are not what they profess to be. Hypocrisy hides the crying sins under the appearance of virtue. This sin of hypocrisy is difficult to cure, and that it is not easily discovered by men. We cannot understand the hearts of others, nor discern between the cloak of hypocrisy and the life of holiness. A spiritual deception has its beginning from a being other than human. Therefore, the scheme is so cunning that it cannot be discerned by the finite observation. This kind of deception can only be recognized under the close scrutiny of the Holy Word of Yahweh and by the aid of His Spirit. The effectual means to cure such a well-devised plan of the deception is a steadfast belief in that there is an all-seeing eye of Yahweh who sees sin wherever it is and will bring it into judgment. A hypocrite may hide his sin from the eyes of others and sometimes from his own conscience, but can never impose upon Yahweh. Paul, looking forward to such a time as this, says, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap unto themselves teachers, having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth, and shall be turned unto fables. 2 Timothy 4:3-4. Thou therefore which teachest another, teachest thou not thyself? Thou that preachest a man should not steal, dost thou steal? Thou that sayest a man should not commit adultery, dost thou commit adultery? Thou that abhorrest idols, dost thou commit sacrilege? Thou that makest thy boast of the law, through breaking of the law, dishonest thy Elohim, Romans 2:21. 23, and to the careless and indifferent, Job comments as follows. He shall devour the strength of his skin, Even the firstborn of death shall devour his strength. Job 18:13. For the seven heads are to symbolically point out these high places ruled by the unsanctified leaders who have attempted to mix the sacred with the common and refuse to hear the word of the Yahweh. For the biblical number seven denoting completeness naturally would comprise all Christendom at the time that the prophetic truth is made known. Such apostasy is not a strange thing in the history of Elohim's people, for time and again the congregation of Israel has fallen under a satanic flood. For in Luther's day, the conditions were as bad as when the congregation crucified Yahshua. If this generation is more wicked than any before it, what would immunize the congregation from just such an apostasy? It is accepted by most people, students, that the prophecies of this nature are understood only when the prophetic object in view is fully developed. Therefore, this is the time of which the symbols speak. However, there is another angle to this by which we shall prove that the facts presented are true. One head wounded unto death. Okay, we're on page 96. It says, John says, I saw one of his heads as it were wounded unto death. And the wounded head had references to the stroke delivered to the papacy by Luther. The exile of the Pope in 1798 was a sign of the completeness of the wound, and that the prophetic period had ended, thus fulfilling the word, "He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity." Revelation 13:10. Had not the papacy received the deadly wound by the Luther, the Pope could not have been put into prison by the French general, for before the pontifical authority received Luther's assured, the Pope reigned supreme, but the blow weakened his power, and the result was that Protestantism came upon the stage of the action, for the continual infliction began to irritate the head, until finally the Pope landed behind the prison bars. The annoyance continued until 1870, when ultimately the temporal power of the Pope was taken away. That being the last vexation of the head, it showed that it was left to heal its deadly wound. Okay, it says, according to the words of Luther explaining how the papacy was wounded, I put forward Elohim's word. I preached and wrote, this was all I did. And yet while I was asleep, the word that I had preached over through popery, so that neither prince nor emperor has done us so much harm. And yet I did nothing, the word alone did it all. Great Controversy, page 190. I began this work in Yahweh's name, said Luther. It will be ended without me and by his might. 142. Let none misunderstand the following statement, for the same author has recorded them both. Therefore, it would be unjust to misconstrue the one statement, for by so doing we would throw out of the harmony the other. Speaking of the 1260 years we read, this period as stated in the preceding chapters began with the supremacy of the papacy A.D. 538 and terminated in 1798. At that time, the Pope was made captive by the French army, and the papal power received its deadly wound, and the prediction was fulfilled. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. Page 439. Note that the aim of the author in this statement is not to tell how the wound was received, but to show that the prophetic period ended with the imprisonment of the Pope which fulfill not the words, and I saw one of his heads as it were wounded unto death. Verse 3. But rather the scripture quoted, he that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. Verse 10. Shall we ignore Yahweh and his spirit and give to Berthier the credit, thus justifying stupidity? His deadly wound was healed. And I saw one of his heads that were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast, Revelation 13:3. William Miller proclaimed the prophetic period of the 2300 days prior to 1844. That wonderful prophecy was delivered unto the believers with the great power by the Spirit of Yahweh. Though the leaders of the nominal churches could not contradict the truth presented by Miller, they turned a deaf ear to the doctrine taught by him. But as the disappointment came in 1844 through the misunderstanding of what was to transpire at the end of the prophetic period, the movement created by Miller came unto its end. The second angel message of Revelation 14:8 had announced that Babylon, the churches, the Protestant churches prior to 1844 had fallen. That is to say that Yahweh would let no light shine upon his word through these fallen congregations. Had Yahweh not called forth another Protestant movement, the deadly wound would have been healed at that time. So the deadly wound had been healed in 1844, but he called forth the Adventists as the seventh Protestant church to protest and keep that wound open. And they did until 1890, and then when the General Conference came in and took over the leadership of the Adventists instead of Ellen G. White, and the people, the majority, obeyed the General Conference and rejected the message of Jones and Wagner in 1888-1890, thus sealing their doom for that generation and showing that Babylon had truly fallen. So, the Babylon didn't completely fall in 1844. He completed his fall when the Adventist Church stopped proselyting against the Catholic Church and allowed that deadly wound to heal. So that deadly wound went into a 40-year fast, according to Ezekiel 4. The spiritual fast that was for Judah, well, the deadly wound also had 40 years to heal. So by 1929 it had healed. By the time the rod movement started in 1930, then V.T. Hollis then had the deal with the General Conference of Jesuits instead of the other way around. By the divinely called movement and aided by the rise of the spirit of prophecy, Yahweh's intention was to keep the deadly wound on the head, but the prophetic word of Yahweh says his deadly wound was healed. Since Yahweh's holy word declares that the wound was healed, and as the prophecy cannot be broken, it is positive that the wound is healed. But if Protestantism by obedience to Elohim's word is what inflicted the wound, then true Protestantism only can keep the painful sore on the head. If the wound is healed, then it is evident that they unto whom Yahweh had committed the message for the perishing world have been defeated in the same manner as every movement since the world began. It is most wonderful thing to know how the old enemy has succeeded in defiling the house of Israel in every age through its leadership. The highest human intellect has been continually led into error and thus have served Satan unto their own downfall, including the last angel of Laodicea. Will Yahweh's people never profit by these historical and biblical facts? Are not these things written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come? Yahweh by his holy word commands, cease ye from man whose breath is in his nostril. For wherein is he to be accounted of? Isaiah 2:22. Okay. It says, for wherein is this? To be, okay, as it has been accepted that the exile of the Pope in 1798 was a signal that the infliction had been accomplished. So then, as he has gained back his temporal power, it further proves that the deadly wound is healed. These facts cannot be denied, for it is admitted that the incident of 1798 is true, therefore the one in 1929 cannot be refuted. That being so, this is the time to which the prophetic symbol speaks. His deadly wound was healed. Read the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, for the entire volume deals with that subject. Okay. Now we're back again to, and all the world wondered after the beast. Well, this brings the close of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us, number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.
Lily and the Ballad.
I have found a friend in Yahshua. He's everything to me. He's the fairest person present to my soul. The lily of the valley, in him alone I see. All I need to change and make me fully whole. In sorrow he's my comfort. Trouble, he's my stay. He tells me every tale on him to know. He's a lily of the valley, bright in morning star. He's the fairest of ten thousand to my soul. He all my grief has taken, and all my sorrows born. Temptation, he's my strong and mighty tower. I have all for him forsaken, and all my arrows torn from my heart, and now he keeps me by his power. Oh, how the world forsake me, when Satan kiss me sore. Through Yahshua, I shall safely be secure. He's a lily of the valley, the bright and morning star. He's a fairest of 10,000 to my soul. He will never, never leave me, nor yet forsake me here. I'll live by faith and do this blessed will. I'll walk far above thee, I've nothing now to fear. With his manna he my hungry soul shall fill. And sweeping up to glory, to see his blessed face. Where rivers of delight shall ever roll. He's a lily of the valley, the bright and morning star. He's a fairest of 10,000 to my soul.